Boki Tov, everybody. Good morning and welcome. A few housekeeping announcements before we start. First of all, I've been asked to announce that this evening, Yemiyat Hashem, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik will be speaking here in the OU Israel Center at 8 p.m. from Ramat Beit Shemesh, and obviously a wonderful opportunity to hear from a big Talmid Chacham. That will be tonight. A little bit further ahead, I've been asked to also announce that there will be a Poland trip in June 2018. I know it sounds like a long time away, but it's not as far as you think. We're accompanied by Rav Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb, who will be taking a group here from the OU Israel Center and other places to Poland. So if anyone's interested in that, please get in touch with the relevant people here in the OU Israel Center. Just thinking in terms of this year, a little bit closer to home, let me just track forward a little bit. Today, we will be doing the last of our series of four dealing with issues of Kashrus. Next week, obviously, is Erev Rosh Hashanah, Wednesday next week, and there will be no Shir. The week following, the Wednesday between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, there will be a Shir, but I won't be giving it, because, and I know you've all been following the ongoing saga of my parents' Aliyah, my parents, please God, are making Aliyah between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and I will be flying to England to help them pack up and to come back with them, etc. So that Wednesday is the Wednesday that we're actually in England flying out. So I'm afraid that I won't be here, but there will be an excellent speaker here for that Wednesday. The Wednesday after, of course, is Erev Sukkot, and the Wednesday after is Erev Simchas Torah. So, Shmini Atzeret. So that effectively means that although there will be a shir in 2 weeks from now, I won't be seeing you for another month. But that should be something also that we can move together forwards in the end of October or in the middle of October. Fine. Today's shir, and I must apologize because something has gone wrong with a couple of the pages of the handout. I don't quite know what, but all the writing has disappeared. It's like the luchos, you know, the writing has flown up somewhere else on page 3 and on page 9. It doesn't matter. I will be giving you the Torah Sheba'al Peh anyway. If you're particular to have a fully formed, intact sheet, then I will be uploading the sheet up to my website today or tomorrow, probably, certainly before Shabbos. So if you really want the whole thing and you want to see what you're missing, then you can download it very easily from the site. It won't be hard to find. But most of it's here, and therefore we should be thankful for that. Now, we talked last week about the honey, and I promised you we talked this week about the apple. Trumas and Maitras is a fascinating topic, which I don't feel is talked about that much. Many people take the view when it comes to Trumot and Maitras that they'd rather not get involved. They're just happy that there's a tuda in the fruit cellar, in the store, and they're just happy that someone else has dealt with it. That's okay. I don't think that's an invalid approach, but it is missing a little bit of an opportunity. The Trumas and Maitras is a mitzvah tluya ba'aretz. It's a special mitzvah that you simply can't do in London, Canada, New York, whatever. Although we'll see, is that true or not true, but basically it's true. And it's an opportunity here. It's a little bit like Shemitah. To go through the whole of the Shemitah year and try and just avoid the issue by buying produce of Yivul Nochri or what it is, okay, that's a legitimate halachic approach, you can't fault it, but it's a bit of a shame. It's a bit like turning around and saying before Shabbos, look, Shabbos is difficult, very difficult for me to keep, I'm very worried I might break Shabbos, just put me under on Friday afternoon and wake me up on Motzei Shabbos, and that way I'll never, ever, ever be Mechalel Shabbos, Baruch Hashem, and it's true, you'll never be Mechalel Shabbos, but you'll never be Shomer Shabbos either, because you'll be missing all of the opportunities of Shabbos, and just like I think someone would never do that for Shabbos, what a waste of an opportunity, so too I think with Mitzvahs and Shluyas Baretz, let's not run away from them, pretend that we can't deal with them, we can, it's not that complicated. So today's shir is really in a few parts. After a short introduction, I'd like to talk a little bit about tevel. What is tevel? Fruit which has not been properly tithed and produce and how we deal with that in practical terms. Then I'd like to run through just a basic outline of what are the Trumas and Maitras that we take, how and when, and what they used to be and what they are today. And then at the end, I'd like to deal with three or four fascinating halachic hashkafic issues dealing with the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael and the way that a moving target, a developing process, which I think you'll find very interesting. Let's start at the very beginning. Page one, we have all the sources, so let's have a look at the start. Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is a new year, not just for us as Jews, but a new year for the land and a new connection to God. The mission in Rosh Hashanah starts. Arba Rosh Hashanim Heim. Be'echad B'Nisan Rosh Hashanah L'malachim L'regalim. Okay, the first of Nisan is the beginning of the count for the Chagim. We know this. We never count the Chagim, Sukkot, Pesach and Shavuot. We always go Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. That's the way that the year works for the Chagim. Echad Be'elul Rosh Hashanah L'Masa Behema. The first of Elul is the Rosh Hashanah, is the beginning of the financial year for Masa Behema. Every tenth animal that will be taken up to Beit HaMikdash and eaten by the owners in a special simcha there, that was from, be counted for the first of Elul. Rebbe Lezer Oimer, Rebbe Shimon Oimerim Be'echad B'Tishrei. They say that's also the first of Tishrei for the Behema as well, for the Maisa, for the tithe on the animals, also the first of Tishrei. But everybody agrees Be'echad B'Tishrei Rosh Hashanah L'Shanim. The first of Tishrei is the new year for the year. We count the year from then. Ule Shmitin, and for the Shmita cycle, we're about to enter now year three of the Shmita cycle, okay, which is, we'll see what the relevance is to that. Ule Yovlus, which we don't really count anymore, the Yovel cycle of 50 years, that also begins each year Rosh Hashanah. Ule Netia, Ule Yerach. And also for planting, in terms of counting the number of years for that a plant, how a plant works in terms of Orla, and for Yerachis, which we'll see is Trumas and Maitres on the project. And finally, Be'echad B'Shvat, the first of Shvat is Rosh Hashanah Le'ilam, is the new year for trees, Kedivrei Beis Shammai, according to Beis Shammai, and Beis Hillel, which of course is the well-known halacha, says, Omrim no, the Chamisha Asa Bo. Tu B'Shvat is Tu B'Shvat. If we followed Beis Shammai, we wouldn't call it Tu B'Shvat, we'd call it Abishvat, or something like that. But we all know that the 15th of Shvat is the new year for trees, and we'll talk just a touch about that later as to how that works. But there's no question that the most significant Rosh Hashanah on all that list is the first of Tishrei in terms of the number of things it's a Rosh Hashanah for, not just for us, for our new beginning, but a whole approach to how we relate to the land. And in fact, Chazal are very insistent that our connection with the land and Sefer Zra'im, the which gives all the laws of the land, is very connected with our connection to God. Okay, number two, there's a Gemara in Shabbos, Amar Reish Lakish. May dechsiv, it brings a posik in Yeshayahu. V'haya emunah titecha, chayfin, yeshuas, chachma, v'das, v'gayma, etc. It brings a list of words which Chazal explain all relate to the shisha sidrei Mishnah. Each of these words relates to one of the six orders of the Mishnah, and emunah, says the Gemara here, is the Seder Zra'im. And obviously, itim times is Seder Moed, and it goes through all of them. Why is Seder Zra'im emunah? What is the emunah? And I just want to alert you to a really fascinating machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos on the hashkafa of this emunah. Why do we connect with emunah, with a connection to God, through the land? So Tosfos says, number three, emunah, ze Seder Zra'im. So he quotes, Mefarish Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi explains simply, Shema Amin Bechei Olamim V'Zorea. Because when a farmer approaches a farm and he has to throw seeds in the ground, that's Avimuna. Who knows what's going to be? Who knows at the beginning of the sowing season, back at the beginning of the year, in November and December, what's going to be by next year? Will there be rain? Will there not be rain? Will we be healthy? Will we not be healthy? It's an exercise in Imunah. It's an amazing thing. We have in our yard, we bought a house a couple of years ago with four of the Shivat Aminim in it. Very beautiful, Baruch Hashem. And we have one grapevine in the back. I'll tell you the truth. When we came to the house, we actually thought it was dead. It hadn't really been looked after. It was just a stick in the ground with, you know. And I said, oh, you know, we'll take it out, we'll put something else. No, we'll give it a year. So the first year that we were there, Itaka grew some leaves. So it proved that it was still alive. But did it grow any grapes? No grapes. This year, and we didn't do anything else, we just put some water on it. This year, so far, this year, we've taken 37 kilos of grapes off that grapevine. I'm not exaggerating at all. And there's at least another 15 on the branches weighing the thing down. It's an ace. You water in, grape juice out. We've been drinking grape juice from the grapevine for the last 4 weeks. So that's the emunah. You have to have emunah at the beginning. It's going to work. It's not going to work. That's tosis. It's a kind of emunah from a helplessness. I can't do anything, I don't have anything, I rely on God, one kind of emunah. Rashi, interestingly, takes exactly the opposite approach. See number four, Seder Zra'im, why is it emunah? Because the halacha is relying on the individual person to take, to give the relevant trumas and maestras when he has and when she has reaped the produce. It's the opposite. The imuna is not the imuna of helplessness. It's the imuna of, now I have all this money, now I've received all this bracha and all this produce, how am I going to relate to that? Am I going to say, am I going to say, fine, it's my stuff, I'll do what I like? Or am I going to give to the poor, to the ger, to the levi, to the kohen, etc.? That's the imunah. The totus is the imunah before, when I have nothing. And Rashi is the imunah when I have everything, when we have everything, and do we still relate to Hashem from a position of plenty? In many ways, totus is imunah, is the imunah of Rosh Hashanah, when we approach God looking forward with trepidation at the new year. And the imunah of Rashi is the imunah of Sukkot, when we look back with thanks on the last year for all that we have got. Very interesting how it plays together. And of course, the final point of the Hagdama with Moshe Rabbeinu, very famous Midrash, number 5, Darash Rabbi Simlai, Mipnei Ma, Nitaveh, Moshe Rabbeinu, Likanet L'Eretz Israel. Why was Moshe so insistent he wanted to go to Israel? Did he just want to eat from the mangoes, the fruits? Or Lisbo, Mitzuvah, Hutarit? Does he need to eat in Papagayo? Is that why he wants to come to Eretz Israel? Because he wants to eat in all the beautiful restaurants here? Ella, Kacham, Moshe said this. Harbe mitzvahs nitzavu Yisrael al yadai. So many mitzvahs have come through me. The ein mitkayemet ella ba'aretz. So many mitzvahs they can only really do in the land of Israel. Ekanet ani, I just want to go in kadesh yitkayemu kol al yadai, so that at least I will be able to keep these mitzvahs that I've been teaching them. It's the mitzvahs of tzvius ba'aretz that Moshe was attracted to. Now, in parentheses, it's an interesting question in Parshanot whether Moshe indeed did go into Eretz Israel. And according to many Meforshim, of course Moshe went into Eretz Israel. There's no shaila about that. He was in Eber LeYarden. That is part of Eretz Israel, promised to Avram Avinu. And indeed, Rav Yoel Ben Nun mentioned in the Shir, and I heard a couple of weeks ago, when at the beginning of Parshas Veschanan, God says to Moshe Rabbeinu, look north and south and west and east at the land that I've given you. So east is looking back from where he just came from. Why does it say east? That's obviously all still Eretz Yisrael. So he is in Eretz Yisrael. He's just not in that part of Eretz Yisrael which is obligated in Trumas and Maestras. As we'll see in a minute, that may be different. So that's really the Hakdama in terms of the Hashgafic background of the Emunah involved. Let's talk about Tevel. What is Tevel? Tevel is produce from which Trumas and Maestras has not yet been taken. Number 6. There's a mitzvah in the Torah, one of the Taryag, V'lo yichalalu et kodshei b'nei Israel. Do not profane the kodshim, the holy things of the b'nei Israel, and et asher yarimu l'ashem. The things that they lift up, yarimu is from the Lashon Truma, they lift up to God. And then it says, points out in the Hemek Gavar, go over to page number 7, that these two expressions, he says, is kodshei b'nei Israel, Hainu Kodshei Mikdash. These are the Kodshim of the Mikdash, the things that we were used to thinking of as Kodshim. Top of page 2. The Korbanos, etc. You all got page 2? Is there a problem? Page 2 on the top. You should have page 2. Everyone got page 2? Excellent. Then we're good to go. Says in its Siv, Hainu Kodshei Mikdash. These are the Kodshim of the Mikdash. And the end of the Pasuk, Et asher yarimu l'ashem, hainu truma. This is truma, and kodshei hagvul. This is an expression we're not so used to. What's kodshei gvul? So kodshei mikdash are those special korbanot, sacrifices, etc. that we brought to the mikdash. But there's not just kodshei mikdash, there's kodshei gvul. There's special kodshim that some people eat, not just in the mikdash, but all over Eretz Yisrael. And that's truma. Truma is a kind of kodshim. And that's the first thing we have to understand. We'll see that maaser is not. Maaser is very different. People put them together. Oh, trumas and maestras. They're actually two very, very, very different concepts. Truma is lahashem, is a gift to God, and it's kodshim, and it's eaten in all of Eretz Israel. We'll see by whom in a minute. So what is tevel? Tevel is food that's not yet had that taken, and there's a prohibition to eat it. So there are three kinds of tevel, or three kinds of produce in the halachas of tevel. B1 I put here, there's tevel vadai. This is food which has definitely, definitely not had trumas maestras taken. For example, if you grow food in your garden, like I was mentioning the grapes, if you buy food from a Jewish farmer, from a kibbutz or whatever in Israel, and you know for an absolute certain fact that they do not fake Trumas and Masras, whatever, they're not religious kibbutz, or this, or it's being done later. That definitely is called Tevel Vadai, and it has to have Trumas and Masras taken with a bracha. There are, I'm not going through all of the details as to how that happens, but with a bracha, in fact, two brachas, there's a bracha on the Truma, the bracha on the Pidyon Matzah Sheni, very beautiful thing. I've asked many people, do you take Trumas and Masras with brachas? Not so many people get to take Trumas and Masras with a bracha. You have to know that the fruit is definitely, or the produce has not had Trumas and Masras taken, unless you grow your own, often that's not something that you know. The prohibition on eating tevel is quite severe. When this applied midoraita, which we'll see soon, is not so poshut nowadays, it's actually say chazal mitia bidei shamayim. It's God forbid death of the hands of heaven to eat produce which has not had trumas and masses, which is far more serious, if you like, than eating treif, than eating a piece of chazal. We'll see the Rambam talks about that in a minute. He says that eating food which has not had trumas and masses taken is actually significantly worse, and we'll see whether that applies today. There is a big machlokas which I'm not getting into today as to which produce requires trumas and masses on a Torah level. Certainly grapes and olives and grain, yes, but maybe, certainly wine and olive oil and grain, maybe also grapes and olives, maybe also other fruits. I've put in the footnote some of the different positions on that. So that's Tevel Vadai. The other extreme is food which is Ma'usar Vadai, which has definitely had Trumas and Masras taken from it. Once it's definitely had Trumas and Masras taken from it, then there's nothing else to do. You have to make sure that's happened, but there really is nothing else to do. There are people who are particularly stringent, and doesn't matter where the food comes from, they will always take off their little bit of Trumas and Masras, because you never know. We'll see in a minute, that's legitimate when it comes to Sofek, but if it's a Ma'usa Vadai, then what are they achieving by taking little bits off? Nothing. Rav Shlomo Zalman Albach, the story goes, had someone come to visit him, and they said to him, the Mechilat Kvod Harav, I hope you don't mind, but I have a personal chumrah that every time, no matter where I eat, I always take trumas and maestras. This is the food that Rav Shlomo Zalman was serving him at the table. Would it offend you if I take trumas and maestras? So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, of course not. So he gives him the plate of food, and he takes a little bit of this, and a little bit of that, a little bit, and he puts it to the side. Rav Shlomo Zalman said, have you finished? He goes, yes. And he picks it up, and he eats the food that he took. You're not wasting my food. You know, if you don't want it, I'll eat it. Meaning, you can have your chumras, but it's not chumras. It's basically bal tashchis, just to take food that he doesn't need it. However, there is another category, which is a genuine sofek. You're not sure. It could be that you're really not sure, that you buy fruit from somebody and you say, has it been tied? Has it had trumas and maestras? They say, well, I don't know. Maybe yes, maybe no. That's often the case. And even if there is some kind of hashgacha, some kind of supervision, we'll talk about how that works in practice, there are people, and this is a legitimate chumrah, there are people that say, look, things can go wrong, and I explain a little bit in a minute who the things that can go wrong, and therefore it's a good idea to take trumas and maestras misofek, and that's definitely something people should be aware of and is a legitimate chumrah. It means you do all the hafrasha, you do all of the different separating and declaring, but not with the brachas. What can go wrong? If there's a heksha, what can go wrong? So, lots can go wrong. Most of the trumas and maestras which is taken in this country is taken in large wholesale fruit packaging and distribution markets. It comes from the farms, it goes to the wholesale markets, and then it goes from there to the retail outlets. These wholesale markets can be very large, very busy, and are somewhat chaotic. And the mashgichim only have one pair of hands, two hands, two eyes, and two legs. They can't be everywhere all at the same time. Here are some of the things that can easily go wrong. A box of food can come in, then everyone thought it had been included in the trumas and maestras they took, but actually it had got in at the side or whatever, and it ended up being taken out, and it never had trumas and maestras taken. Or maybe trumas and maestras was taken at the farm. Sometimes the farms do it back at the farm, and this was a box of food which had already had trumas and maestras taken, and they didn't realize, and they used this produce as trumas and maestras for other produce, and that doesn't work, because it's already been tied. Or, for example, they could have a box of fruit coming in from Elat, which has a lower level of obligation of trumas and maestras, and they use that, not realizing that's where the box came from, to take trumas and maestras from fruit from somewhere else in the middle of Israel, which is on a higher level, we'll see why soon. And that doesn't work either, because you have to take from something which is actually chayav on the same level, obligated on the same level, not from something which is less chayav. These are all things that could go wrong, and therefore it's not a bad thing if people want to take on a chumrah to take from some ma'asras misafek. I'm not saying it's required. The Mahadrin Hechsherim try to avoid these problems. Whether they succeed or not is a good question, but some things they can do are either have more mashgichim with less responsibilities so that they can be more on top of things, or they can take at the farm, like I mentioned, send a guy over to the farm when he knows it's been done. Or they can have extra guys in the shops, taking in the shops, just in case it didn't happen properly at the wholesale market. Again, I'm not on top of what all the Mahadran Hashas do. Maybe they do, maybe they don't, but that's what they can do. Two questions, yes, sir. Oh, we'll get to that in a minute. Some goes to the zoo, but... We'll talk about that in just a minute. We're getting there. What happens to the fruit? Because when I take trumas and maizes for my grapes, it's 5 grapes. But when they take trumas and maizes, you're talking crates and crates and crates. Yes?
I wasn't clear on the second one you said where they might be taking the trumas and maizes from...
Produce from different parts of Israel. So we'll...
Or
it might be on a lower level. It maybe was already taken at the farm, and therefore it's not obligated at all, and they didn't realize, and they thought it... No, you can't. It has to be, the halacha says, min achayev al achayev, not min apota al achayev. It has to be the same level. Yes? Some do, some don't. You don't. You can't rely on that. You have to know what actually happened. Again, a regular standard hechsher, tznuva used to be involved some years ago in response with the responsibility for supervising that. But I spoke to Rav Wittman, who's davens in our shul, in Alon Shvut, and I asked him, is tznuva still involved? He's the mashgiach of tznuva. He says, no, tznuva's not involved at all anymore. I've heard people say to me, oh, don't worry, tznuva deal with everything. It's not true. If they deal with your yogurts, that's fine, and meat, whatever they produce, but they don't have anything to do with vegetables anymore. So you can't just assume that it's happening. One has to check it out and then work accordingly. Fine. Let's move on. Yes.
Yeah. What is that if you're in America and you see that the...
Produce comes from Israel. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Remind me if we haven't brought that up. There's a lot to do on the sheet. Let's move on. But we are going to talk about all of these issues. Now, let's just give a brief overview of what it actually is that we're taking when we take trumas and maasros. So, if you look at the bottom of page 2, there are many mitzvahs tluyos ba'aretz, which are dependent on Eretz Yisrael, and I want to take an overview of 6 of them. Truma gedola, maaseh rishon, trumat maaseh, maaseh sheni, maaseh ani, and revoi. And I'm not going into detail. I'll define what each of these are in a few minutes. What each of these is, and we'll give you a little bit of an overview. There are many, many other mitzvot hatzuliyot ba'aretz. There are many. I made a list at the bottom of the page of some of them. There are things like peyah, which we don't really do anymore, leaving the corners of the field for the poor. Leket, we kind of do the modern day equivalents of that by giving food to the poor. There's an organization obviously called Leket, but that's not really Leket. Shichacha. Shichacha is when you used to forget a sheaf of wheat or whatever in the fields, that was left for the poor. Peret, which is the equivalent of leket, which are the gleanings in a grapevine. Olalots. Olalots are grape clusters which have malformed. A grape cluster should be a beautiful triangular shape. If you have certain clusters which are all kind of crunched up, so they also used to have to be left for the poor. That's not, we don't do that anymore. Challah, obviously we do still do. Kilayim, certain aspects apply only in Israel. Shemitah, Yovel. Chadash, obviously, is a big machlokas, whether Chadash is only in Israel or also in Chutz La'aretz. And Orla does apply in Chutz La'aretz to some degree. But we're looking really at the trumas and the maasros. So go to page 3. Page 3 is the blank page with one little square in the middle. Now, it shouldn't look like that. It should look like this, and I don't know what happened. But it's fine, because I will tell you what's missing on page 3, and you'll have to pretend that it's there. Let's talk about mitzvah of tluyah ba'aretz for a second first. So, what is a mitzvah tluyah ba'aretz? So the Gemara debates this in Kiddushin. Is it something where the Torah actually said, when you get to the land, then you will do this mitzvah? And the Gemara rejects that, and it says, no, because there are other mitzvahs like tefillin that also say, when you get to the land, you'll do that. And tefillin is not one of the mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz. And the Gemara eventually defines mitzvahs hatluyot ba'aretz are mitzvahs which apply to the karaka, which apply to the ground, as opposed to tefillin which applies to the individual. The man puts on tefillin, it's nothing to do with the ground, and therefore only the ground of Eretz Yisrael, as we'll see for soon why, has this special status. aren't all mitzvahs better off in Israel? And maybe you don't have it on the page, but I quote you one line from the Sifrei, which is well quoted these days. In the Shema, it says, "Va'avadaten mehera," you will quickly be lost from the land and leave to Chutz Laaretz. And there, "Vasamta mitzvarai eile," but there you still have to wear tefillin, it says. Even when you go to Chutz Laaretz, you still, says the verse, you still have to do mitzvah. So why do you have to tell me that even in Galut, even in New York, I still have to do mitzvahs? Why would I not do mitzvahs that are nothing to do with Israel? Because the Gemara, or the Sifrei explains, "Afel pisha ani magale etchem min haaretz lechutz laaretz," even though I'm sending you to Chutz Laaretz, and you would have thought that there are no mitzvahs in Chutz Laaretz. Why should there be mitzvahs? Mitzvahs are connected with Eretz Yisrael. Have a mitzuyani b'mitzvahs. You still have to do mitzvahs in America, because in England also, because when you come back to Israel, lo yihu aleichem chadashim, so you shouldn't feel weird for you. Meaning we're doing mitzvahs in Chutz Laaretz to some degree to practice so that when we come back to Israel. Now, that doesn't mean the mitzvah doesn't apply fully. I once, you know, went to, some guy stood up on Friday night in the shul I was once in, and he stood up and he said, all mitzvahs in Chutz Laaretz are drabonon. They're all rabbinic. And I went up to him afterwards and I said, where did you get that from? That's complete and utter nonsense. And he wouldn't have it. He quoted it. I said, it didn't say they're rabbinic. They're Torah mitzvahs, but they're just lower voltage Torah mitzvahs. Okay, what's the voltage in America? And what's the voltage in Israel? There you have it. There you have it. Okay, England's 240, all right. Fine. So it's a lower voltage mitzvah, it's still a Torah mitzvah, but it has less of a spiritual punch. A little bit like you could say a mitzvah which is done without simcha is also a kiyum mitzvah. You also did a Torah mitzvah, but it's not the same as a mitzvah which is done with simcha. If you look in the Rambam, it's very clear. Simcha is not like an extra thing. It's an essential component of the mitzvah, and it's a different kind of mitzvah. So too in Israel, every mitzvah is a different kind of mitzvah, even if it's not a mitzvah tluya ba'aretz. So let's talk first about Truma Gedola. Again, I'm sorry, it's not all on the page, but you can download the sheet. What is Truma Gedola? So Truma Gedola, we have to always talk about then and now. Then and now. Truma Gedola was originally a gift for the Kohanim. It was not to be eaten by anybody else. Only the Kohanim could eat it. It had no fixed amount. You could give even a little bit. And the Chazal recommended that if you were a regular person, you gave 2%, a 50th. If you were generous, you gave a 40th, 2.5%. If you were stingy, you gave a 60th. But it went to the Kohanim. To which Kohanim? Any Kohanim. Kohen of your choice. Mr. Kohen down the road. Mrs. Katz up the road. Okay, whatever it is. Rabbi Kagan down the road. Or anyone who has a Kohen, Yichas, could eat truma and with their families, and only in a state of tahara. They have to be tahor. They have to have no truma at all. And that's why today, let's move up into modern days, today truma cannot be eaten by anybody. Because the Kohanim are all tameh, because we're all tameh, we are all have tumat met, and therefore we cannot now give the truma to the Kohanim. So what do we take now? We don't bother taking 2%, because it's all going to be thrown in the garbage anyway. Or at least wrapped up nicely and thrown in the garbage, but we're throwing it away. To take more would be bal tashchis. So we take a very nominal, minimal amount as truma gedola. If you look at the one thing which did survive from this page, which is that beautiful little graph in the middle, you'll see that what we take truma gedola is just a tiny little bit over 1% of the project. Like, just under, it's a tiny little bit, we'll see there's a 1% afterwards what that's removed for. One tiny little, the black line, the little sliver, that's what we take for Truma Gedola. And we give it to nobody. We wrap it up and we throw it in the garbage, in a nice way, in the bin. It's clear, by the way, from the Psukim, that Truma Gedola really is for God. It's a gift to Hashem. Hashem just delegates that you can give this gift to me, by giving it to these people, to give it to the Kohanim, because these are the people who are doing my avodah, and therefore, even though we're giving it as a truma, lifting it up, as kodshim, as I said before, to our Kodesh Baruch Hu, nevertheless, it goes to the Kohen. Someone asked today, what happens to the truma today? So what happens to my truma is it gets wrapped up in a plastic bag and put in the bin. What happens to the large amounts of truma from all of the different places that produce in math, on math, is they try to do something with it. And the only one thing you can to do today with truma is you can give it to the animal of a kohen. So the zoo, as you mentioned, the animals in the zoo are owned by kohanim, so I understand, and therefore much of the food that they eat is food which is technically truma, which obviously is cheap, because otherwise they're going to have to throw it away. not just the zoo though. There are many farms on which the animals are owned by Kohanim, so they can be fed with truma produce, which is obviously cheap and sensible to use them in this way. Which, by the way, makes the farms very interesting, because what do you have on the farms? You have animals owned by Kohanim. You have animals which are regular animals not owned by Kohanim. And then you also have animals owned by non-Jews. Why? Because for the halacha of Bechor, when a farmer has a kosher animal, the firstborn male animal is a Bechor. And it used to be a big simcha to have a Bechor. You took it to the Kohen, to the Beit HaMikdash, everyone had a party. Now it's a big pain in the neck to have a Bechor. You can't eat it, you can't kill it, you can't work it, you can't shear it. It just runs around the farm taking over as though it owns the place. So nobody wants to have that headache. So what they do is they sell the animal to a non-Jew, and a non-Jew is not obligating a Bechor. So you have this whole shtiebel of different animals. Some of them are Kohanim, some of them are Yisraelim, some of them are non-Jews, like all chevra, all together in the farm. And obviously they have to know which food to give to which, to this, to that. You thought it was easy to be a farmer. It's not easy to be a farmer. So that's what we do with Truma. Back in the day, and even today, Kohanim themselves still have to take Truma. They have to take it because it's a gift to Hashem, and they can take it back to themselves. Okay, obviously today they can't eat it anymore. So that's the story with Truma Gedola. Go over the page to page 4. Yes, sir. Bakery take challah. Challah kicks in later, that's already when you have the flour. Okay? The bakery is only the original producer take Truma Gedola. By the way, when you go to somewhere like the Carmel Winery, their hafrashat truma is a whole big geshef, because they take truma from the wine. That's how you, because the wine is the final product. And what they do, they have a whole ceremony. They open up the spigot on the vat, and they let a large, significant amount of wine run down into the vat, because they have to take truma from the wine. Now, they don't give that to the animals in the zoo, although that would be quite interesting if they did. It would make the monkeys quite excited. But that they just let run off. And they have every year, you can go up there, you can go see the truma, the hafrashat truma ceremony, where Carmel wineries and other wineries do that as well. So that's truma. Over the page to page 4, this survived. Maserishon. Maserishon is a gift originally to the Levi, but it's not like truma. It's a monetary gift to the Levi. It's in response, look at the Pasuk in 13, Hashem says clearly, Ulevnei Levi, hini natati kol maser b'Yisrael, lenachala. I've given the Leviim maser, which we'll see is a tenth of the produce after you separated from a gedola. Chelef avodatam. It is compensation. It's monetary compensation. Hashem ovdim et avodat ohel mo'ed. It's not like truma. Truma is really holy. It's kodshim. It's for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Kohen takes it. Maser is just a payment. It's just, they have no parnasa because they don't have land of their own. So you give to the Levi. So back in the day, it was a monetary gift, 10%. Maser obviously means a tenth. And it was eaten by the Levim. They don't have to be Tahor. They can eat it. They can give it to whoever you like. So what about today? So today, why don't we just give it to the Levim? So there are people, by the way, who do. They can hunt down a local Levi. And that's another problem, by the way, with the Kohanim. You're not really ever sure that you're a Kohen these days. You're a Kohen Muchzak. Okay, there are certain families, Rappaport, etc. They claim to be Kohenim Yuchasim, and maybe that's even true. But most Kohenim only know they're a Kohen because their father said they were a Kohen. It's like the bad joke I'm not going to answer now. And the grandfather said they were a Kohen, etc. Levim is the same. You don't really know who's a Levi, but it doesn't really matter, does it? Because you don't have to really be a Levi to eat it. And the truth is, we don't even give it to the Levim anymore, because even if a Levi came to me and said, oi, I want 10% of your field, of your produce, I'd say, well, prove that you're a Levi. In halachit, hamotzi mechavero, I'll have a raya. If you want to take my money, you have to prove that I owe you. And since he's not going to be able to prove any kind of documentation that he's a bona fide meyuchas Levi, he ain't going to get nothing from me. So what do we do? What do we do today? We just take the maaser rishon. We don't separate it. We declare it on the produce, and we eat it ourselves. Okay, so that's nice and easy. Trumat maaser number 3, C3. Trumat maaser. Look at the pasuk in 14. The el halavim tadaber. Hashem says you have to tell Levim that amata aleim ki tikhu me'et bnei Israel et amata. When they take maaser, Hashem natati lachem itam benachalatchem. The maaser that they've got, this 10%. The harimaitem mimenu trumat Hashem. They have to also give truma from their produce. Maaser mina maaser. They have to take the tenth of the tenth that they get. And they have to give that to the Kohen, and that's exactly the same as the regular Truma that we talked about before. So today we also have to do this. We can't eat that tenth of a tenth. That also has to be taken off with the Truma, even though the Maaser Rishon, the Levim, are not going to get. But that tenth of the Maaser Rishon has to go to Truma. And therefore, if you look at the diagrams I've given you on page 4, then Maaser Rishon, obviously, the top is a tenth. And then a tenth of that tenth, which is 1%, that's the Trumat Maaser, which I have to separate. So really, in practical terms, all I separate when I've got my large amount of produce or whatever it is, my grapes from the garden, I take off just over 1% of the produce. Okay, if I had 100 grapes, I take one and a bit, okay? And that one and a bit is going to be Truma Gedola, which is the bit, and the 10% of the 10%, now that's 1% of the whole, which is Trumat Maaser. And that will be wrapped up and thrown away, yes. No, Truma goes straight to the Kohen. The Truma doesn't go to the Levi. The Levi can't do anything with Truma. The Truma is only for the Kohen. The Levi can't eat Truma. Fine. The last thing we really have to do is Maaser Sheni. And I'm not getting into all of the details of Maaser Sheni now, but the psukim there in number 15, which is a special mitzvah, that Maaser Sheni goes to whom? Goes back to you. You have to take it and eat it yourself, but only in Yerushalayim. And the purpose of the psukim are very explicit what the purpose of that is. That we want everybody, every Jew, to have to see Yerushalayim, the special spirit of Yerushalayim, the people who lived in Yerushalayim, and that also had to be eaten in a state of tahara. You had to become tahor, eat in Yerushalayim, etc. If, say the psukim, you had too much produce and you simply can't get it all to Yerushalayim, by the time you get there, it's all going to have gone off and there'll be nothing left to eat. So you redeem it. You redeem it onto coins, onto money. And back in the day, what they used to do is redeem it for its proper value. You had, I don't know, $100 worth of Maaser Sheni. You take $100 of silver coins, take those coins to Yerushalayim, redeem the produce onto the coins, and then spend the coins on various different things in Yerushalayim, or give them to your kids who are learning in the mirror, or whatever it is, and they would eat it in Yerushalayim. Today, we can't do that anymore, because again, we're all tamei. So what do we do with the Maaser Sheni? Simple. Go over to page 5. What we do with the Maaser Sheni, we take off a tenth of the remaining produce. Now, having given already Maaser Rishon to the Levi, as it were, that is basically 9% of the original. You'll see the little diagram there. And Maaser Sheni, we simply redeem onto a coin. And then we eat it, and the holiness and the Kedusha of the Maaser Sheni is now left on the coin. We don't bother redeeming it for the full value today, because what's the point? There's nothing I can do with it anyway. So even one pruta is enough to redeem any amount of Maaser Sheni. So I just need a coin which is worth more than a pruta. How much is a pruta? A pruta is a 40th of a gram of silver. And that changes depending on the market value of silver. I looked on the internet a couple of days ago. It's around 5.5 agarots a pruta. Not very much. So if you take a 10 shekel coin, there's around 150 prutas in that coin. It'll be good for 150 rounds of redeeming your Maaser Sheni. And then when it's full up, what do you do? You can redeem the value of that coin onto a smaller coin and then dispose of that coin. You throw it in the sea or whatever, and then your coin's emptied it out, and you can fill it all up again. For people who find that a bit complicated, like me sometimes, because there are other complications, you can join up and be a member of, there are various different Kerens that you can visit. This is, well, there's one in Har Nof, but there are other ones, and they have the coins for you. And you basically, the way that you recite it is you redeem your Maaser Sheni on their coins, and every day they deal with emptying, quotes and quotes, the different Maaser Sheni which has been redeemed on the coins, and that's how they do it. That's how I do it. It's really not that complicated. You just have to change the little nusach accordingly. Maaser Sheni is taken in years 1, 2, and 4, and 5 of the Shemitah cycle. And in 3 and 6, instead of Maaser Sheni, there's Maaser Oni. Again, back in the day, Maaser Oni was a gift to the poor. You'd give the fruit to the poor. Today, you should still, if you have significant amounts, give it to the poor. But again, no one really wants my 3.5 grapes. Draying up and down Alice Foot. Is anybody interested who's an Ani in these 3.5 grades? So what people do today often is they do it in a kind of way which is through tzedakah. They will make a loan perhaps to a poor person, loan them the money, and then as they get the Maaseh Ani, they will gift that, if you like, to the poor person halakhically and take it back as payment of the loan. So at the end of the day, the Ani gets something worth getting, which is money, because he doesn't really want my grapes. And I did do the mitzvah of Maaseh Ani. I'm not getting into exactly how that works, but this is a Maaseh Ani year, this year of the Shemitah cycle, starting from next week, Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, if people do have significant amounts of produce, they have to give a little bit of thought to who that might go to and how to give it to them. Again, I can give you further details if you're interested. Now, let's go on, because in the last 20 minutes of the Shir, I'm not going to talk about Ravoi now. It's the fourth project of the fourth year, similar to Maaseh Shir. Let's talk for the last part of the Shir about four fascinating issues in Halacha and Hashkafa, which relate to the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. Why is Eretz Yisrael more Kaddish than other lands? So look in number 16, please, on the top of page 6. Eser Kedusha Tein, says the Mishnah in Kalim, there are 10 levels of Kedusha. Eretz Yisrael Mekudeshet Mikol Arotzot. Israel, Eretz Yisrael is more Kaddish than all other lands. Umahi Kedushata. What is the special? Why is Eretz Yisrael special? Shemevi Mimena HaOmer, because we bring the Korban Omer, the barley harvest for the Omer, the barley offering for the Omer. The Habikurim, and we bring the first fruits. V'shtei Alechem, and we bring the wheat offering on Shavuot. Mashein Mevin Kemi Kol Aratzot, and that doesn't apply anywhere else. That's why Eretz Yisrael is special. Now it's interesting, he didn't mention Tumas and Masrus. It didn't say Eretz Yisrael is special because it has Trumas and Masrus and Chutz La'aretz doesn't. It may be that ultimately the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is rooted, therefore, in Mikdash. In the idea of the Mikdash, therefore, it used the example of these three Korbanos, which are, of course, only related to the Mikdash. And in fact, there is a fascinating machlokas in the Rishonim between the Kuzari and various other mystical, more mystical-oriented Rishonim, and the Rambam, who, of course, is a rationalist, as to what is the nature of the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. The Kuzari, I brought you a quote for, in number 17 from the Kuzari, and he goes very much into the segula of Eretz Yisrael. That there were certain key individuals in our history who had that special spark of inherent Kedusha, Abraham, Yitzchak, and before them, Noach, and Eber, etc., and Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and since they were super holy individuals, they have to be in a super holy charged land, and there's an inherent nature of Kedusha within the land and the people itself. The Kuzari, if you could have some kind of a Geiger counter that measures, Kedusha, whatever that would be, and you kind of wave it over Hendon or Brooklyn, it wouldn't register very highly, and you wave it over, Ashdod, and it would go. There's almost an inherent Kedusha in the land. It's a thing. Whatever that is, a spiritual thing. The Rambam takes a different view. The Rambam seems to understand that Eretz Yisrael is Kaddish. Why? Because it's a Chepta Shel Mitzvah. It's Kaddish because people do mitzvot there, and that's what gives it the Kedusha. And sometimes it has the Kedusha, sometimes it loses some of the Kedusha, but it's much more of a din. It's much more of a halachic construct, as opposed to an inherent Kedusha. And by the way, this is a very big machlokas that goes across many issues. I recommend a book, which I read some years ago, which I recommend very highly, which is called Maimonides' Confrontation with Mysticism, by a very talented writer, academic, and also a very good, important Jewish thinker called Menachem Kellner. Some of you may know Professor Menachem Kellner. Oh, it's your brother? I didn't know that. Okay. And I'm sure very highly recommended over here. He was many years in Haifa, and he's been in Yerushalayim. I've corresponded with him on a few things. I recommend everything he wrote, but this particular book was very, very interesting. Because he shows how on a number of key issues of Kedusha, what is the holiness of the Jewish people as opposed to non-Jewish people? What is the Hebrew language versus non? What is Kedusha? What is Tahara? He shows how this machlokas in the Rishonim between inherent mystical Kedusha and more of a halakhic din goes all the way through many issues. It's fascinating. I haven't got time to get into now, but Maimonides' Confrontation with Mysticism. There's a lot to say about the book, but that's not for now. Therefore, the Rambam in number 18, he says, just look for a second, Lamani Omin b'Mikdash b'Yerushalayim Kedusha Rishonah Kitchel Asid Lavoi. Why do I say with Mikdash with the Beis HaMikdash, the Kedusha that it originally had was forever. Upe Kedusha Shar Eretz Yisrael, we'll see in a minute, with the rest of Eretz Yisrael, Le'inyin Shvi'it U'matos Kiyotze Bahem, when it comes to many of the agricultural laws of Israel, Lo Kitchelatid Lavo, Israel doesn't work that way. Meaning the Kedusha of Mikdash is forever, but the Kedusha of the land of Israel wanes and grows depending on whether the Jewish people are there, not there, etc. He says, Lefi Shekedusha HaMikdash Yerushalayim Mipnei HaShchina. So there he agrees, says the Rambam. Shechina. Shechina never leaves Mikdash and maybe even Yerushalayim. Shechina ain't a batela. You can never get rid of the Shechina. Aval chiyuv eretz ha-shvi'it b'shvi'it u'masas ain't el mitnei shehu kibush rabim. And we'll get into this in a minute. The Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is not because of Shechina. It's because of what the Jewish people did there. We came, we left. Kedusha came, Kedusha left to some degree. Now, it's important to stress that when the Rambam talks about different Kedusha in different times, and we'll talk about that right now, he's not talking about many aspects in which we relate to Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah of maybe not leaving Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvah of being, the Indian of being buried in Eretz Yisrael. That, I think the Rambam probably agrees, is everlasting and applies to Israel. But when it comes to the agricultural laws, we will see right now that the Kedusha is something which has come and gone, and this will definitely help us understand some of the different halachas that we see. When you go into Rami Levi during Shemitah year, and you see two lots of potatoes, and one has a sign saying, Ole Mitzrayim, and one has a sign saying, Ole Bavel. Now, I wonder what people think when they read these signs. They think that these potatoes came from Cairo and these potatoes came from Baghdad? No, that's not what happened. These potatoes all came from different parts of Israel, but some came from these borders, and some came from those borders. And we'll see right now, with the help of some maps as well, how that works. So let's look at number 19. It's a little bit complicated, but I'm sure we'll do very well. Number 19, says the Rambam in Hilchos Truma, Kol Sheikhziku Ole Mitzrayim. Here they are. All the land of Israel that was conquered by the Ole Mitzrayim. Who are the Ole Mitzrayim? Yeshua and the Jewish people. The Nit Kadesh Kedusha Rishon, and had that original Kedusha. Kevan Shegalu, as soon as the Jewish people were taken out to Golath in Babel, Bakalu Kedushatam. That was it. That Kedusha left. End of Kedusha. She Kedusha Rishon, because this first Kedusha, again, not like Mikdash, which was Shechina, but the land, Lefisha Haita Mipnei HaKibush, because it was caused by the conquest, Bilvad only, Kitchel HaShasa was a temporary Kedusha, the Lot Kitchel HaAtid Lavoim was not a permanent. The Jewish people came, created Kedusha, they were taken away, Kedusha left. Kevan She'alu Bnei HaGola, when the people came back from Babel, from the Galut, in Shivat Zion, the Hichziku B'Mikzad HaAretz, and they settled certain parts of the land, Kedusha Shnia, they gave a second Kedusha, Ha'omedet La'olam. Says the Rambam, his Shita is, it lasts forever. L'shasa, both then, U'la'afid Lavo, and now as well. V'hinicho atama makoma she'ichzu behem Ole Mitzrayim, but they didn't take all of the land, they left some of the areas that the Ole Mitzrayim had conquered, and they consciously didn't settle them. And he gives a reason, because they wanted to make it easier on some of the poor people during Shemitah year, that they should be able to work some of the land and not have to leave all of the land. But what comes out from this is that the Ole Mitzrayim and the Ole Babel had different areas of land. Now, if you go for a second, again, I apologize, some of the maps didn't quite work out, but if you look, all the maps are there, you're just missing some of the pictures, although the wording. Look on the penultimate page, which should be page 9. There are a number of maps on that page. It doesn't matter that you don't have the writing. So in the middle of the page, again, we had a caption under it, but on the middle of the page on the left, you'll see there is a map of Israel with a big bulge on the eastern side of the Jordan. Okay, that is the Ole Mitzrayim. The Ole Mitzrayim took the land all the way from the Litani River in the north, all the way down to the south into the Negev, parts of the Negev, and also on the east bank of the Jordan. On the left of that, the other similar looking map, is the basic boundaries of the Ole Babel, which was obviously less. It didn't go to the east bank of the Jordan. They only had the land on the west, side of the Jordan, and they conquered some of the south, but not quite all of the same north. So there are areas which are in Ole Mitzrayim, but not in Ole Babel. But of course it gets more complicated because there are other definitions of Eretz Yisrael. I brought that little map on the bottom. That is the land that Shlomo HaMelech conquered. That went even further north, all the way to the Euphrates. And if you want to get very extreme, just turn back a page to page 8 on the bottom, you'll see if you take the borders that Avraham Avinu was promised to the Brit Bein HaBetarim, you'll see where it says promised land, okay? So this is very optimistic, but this is the boundary that we see in Parshas Lech Lecha, which goes all the way from Nahar Mitzrayim to Nahar Prat, and that could be all the way from the Nile to the Euphrates. The only place, I think, where you find maps defining Israel as that large a territory are probably in Iranian schools, where they tell the children what the Zionist aspiration is. They do use this, and they say this is what Israel is looking for. As far as I'm aware, I'm not sure there's anyone in the Israel political scene that is aspiring to that boundary. But nevertheless, we see different boundaries of Eretz Israel. And the Rambam, just going back to the Rambam said that you have to know your boundaries. It's very important. Certain parts of Israel are chayiv in Trumas and Maaseres, Ole Babel, but Ole Mitzrayim is not. Okay, so far it sounds very much like Trumas should apply in the areas of the Ole Babel. Didn't the Rambam just say that the second Kedusha that the people gave when they came from Babel was forever? Now, there are those who disagree. There are other shitot, there are other opinions in the Rishonim that say even the Kedusha of the Ole Babel also lapsed once the temple was destroyed and the Jewish people were exiled again. So there is a machloket on whether that Kedusha is still there, but the Rambam says that it is. So according to the Rambam, should Trumot or Maaseres apply on a Torah level within that area? Yes, they should. And yet, they don't. Because of something else, the last thing I want to talk about today, which is called Biat Kulchem, which is a fascinating halacha, which I think you will find very instructive. Look at, please, at page 7. Page 7, which you have. From now on to the end of this year, we're on firm footing. You have everything you need. Have a look at page 7, please. The Rambam comes along at the very end of the first chapter of Trumot, of Hilchot Trumot, having told you Eretz Yisrael is the Ole Babel and the Kedusha applies and the Trumot should be really a writer. He then tells you the following halacha, number 20. Hatruma bizman hazeh. Afilu b'makom she'echziku Ole Babel. Even in the areas of Eretz Yisrael which are definitely Ole Babel. Afilu b'yemei Ezra. Even in the time of Ezra, even during the Beit HaMikdash, einu min haTorah. It's no longer min haTorah. There's no Truma min haTorah. Elam Yidibrayim, it's rabbinic. Why? She'ein lecha truma shel Torah ela be'eretz Yisrael bilvad. Because truma only applies in Eretz Yisrael. Bizman shekol Yisrael sham. All the Jewish people have to be there. She'ne'emar ki tavo, when you all come, it says, biat kulchem. Chazal understood biat kulchem. K'shehayu b'Yerusha Rishona, when they all originally came from Egypt, and as one day the Rambam gives us a promise, one day the Jews will all come back, which is an interesting question. When Mashiach comes, do all the Jews need to come back to Israel? Sounds like the Rambam may be saying yes, although all may not be all. But Yerusha Shlishis, when you think forward when the Jews come back. But now that hasn't happened, lo kashayu b'Yerusha shnei shehayta b'imei Ezra, not like it was with Ezra, kashayta b'yet miksata. Where did most of the Jews stay when the Jews came back after the Zimbabwe? They weren't able to leave behind their nice homes and their nice gashmias and start off in a speculative venture in building a new land. Says the Rambam, therefore, the fikach fourth line, third line at the end, loy chiva otam min haTorah, therefore that this land no longer has a Torah obligation in Truma. V'chein yirali shehu adin b'masras, that's true, I think, in Masras as well. She'ein chayavim bizmanazeh elam edivrein k'truma. Fine. According to the Rambam, Truma, Maaser, certainly Challah, because this is where it originally comes from, is all rabbinic today, even in Israel. By the way, Rav Chaim Britzke says this applies also to Shemitah, which becomes very important in the whole Heter Mechira debate. If you get into Heter Mechira, it works, it doesn't work. It turns out, according to this, that all the Shemitah is on a rabbinic level anyway, and therefore maybe one can take different kinds of measures to solve certain problems. And therefore the Rambam's view is until all the Jewish people come to Eretz Israel, then it's all on a rabbinic level. And this is indeed how the Shulchan Aruch paskens. Have a look in number 22 for a second. Bizman hazeh, afilu b'makom she'ehziku ba'ole Babel, even in the place where the Ole Babel went, afilu b'yimei Ezra, even in the time of Ezra, ein chiyuv trumas amasus min haTorah elim edivreihem. It's all rabbinic now. It's nation now. Because it says, ki tavou mashma biat kulchem, only when you're all there, v'lo biat miktasam, not when only a few people are there, kamo she'ehziku b'yimei Ezra. The Ramah brings another shita, v'yesh cholkim, there is a view that disagrees, v'sfira lehu dechayim achshav be'eretz Yisrael, v'trumas amasus min haRaisa, which is the Raivad and others' view, that actually the Rambam's not correct. But that's not our minag. Our minag is to go with the view that it's rabbinic. So what does biat kulchem really mean? Does it mean that every Jew has to be in Eretz Israel? Oh. So look at the Ritva in number 23. Even though chala applies, and according to the Rambam, this is true of Truma as well as Masras. It doesn't apply anymore. Mina Torah, Kevin She'ein Roiv Yisrael Aleh. That the majority of the Jews are not there. And actually I brought you a piece from Rav Zevin at the bottom, and he says it has to be this way. You can't possibly, it's totally illogical to say that every Jew in the world has to be in Eretz Yisrael for all of the mitzvahs that Shluyas Baris to apply. What happens when Shmulik goes on holiday to Greece? The whole of Israel suddenly is Potter, Midaraita, from Shmitzer, and Trumas, and Maestras, and this, and now come back, you know? Come back in. No, it has to be Roiv Yisrael. Now, Rav Chaim Brisker, before you get too excited about whether the majority of the Jews live in Israel or not, Rav Chaim Brisker said, it doesn't matter what happens today. It was what happened at the time of Ezra, and since the majority didn't come in Ezra, so it's for Fallon, you'll never have this halacha. However, many others disagree, and they say there is actually a tipping point. Go for a second over to page number 8. We'll finish with two very interesting observations. There are those who hold that indeed Roiv Yisrael is even today. And once we hit that tipping point when the majority of world Jewry lives in Israel, then indeed a number of these halachas will upgrade. And even though Trumas and Maestras and maybe even Shemitah and Challah apply today only Drabonon, once you hit that number, then we'll have to maybe change some of our halachic practices. Look at number 25. I brought you something from the Atlanta Jewish Times. For anyone from Atlanta, you should have a nice warm feeling. Israel's population, this was by Yom HaAtzmaut this year, surpassed 8.5 million B'liah and Hora this year, of whom 6,484,000 are Jews. Israel's Jewish population represents 74% of the country and 43% of Jews worldwide. Demographer Sergio Della Pergola of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem predicts that this trend will both continue and accelerate, which we hope it will. In his 2015 report on world Jewish populations, Della Pergola writes, significantly, according to all scenarios, the Jewish population is expected to diminish somewhat in the U.S., to increase substantially in Israel, and to diminish at variable rates in the countries in the rest of the world. From initial near equality between the Jewish population in the U.S. and Israel, each assessed at around 5.6 to 5.8 million, 41-42% of world Jewry, in 2010. By 2050, Israel is projected to become the absolute majority, 56 to 57%, 51% according to some, while by all scenarios, the U.S. is expected to comprise a third of the world's total, etc. Now, of course, it depends on who makes Aliyah. See, my parents will help a little bit. It depends on how many people assimilate, unfortunately, in America. And it also depends on how many Jews there are in the world. Because it's not clear who is a Jew, as you well know. And there are many people out there who don't know that they're halachically Jews who are. Are they included in that cheshbon? How will we ever know? We'll never know. I once spoke to a statistician from Hebrew U who assured me, as far as he was concerned, he looked back at the numbers from the time of the Mikdash, and he worked out, based on statistics, who would have girls, who would have girls, who would have girls, who would have girls. He told me there are over 600 million halachic Jews in the world today. 600 million! Most of whom have no clue that they're Jewish. They say large numbers of people in Spain really are halachically Jewish. They just don't know it. There's no nation in the world that doesn't have Jewish blood in their veins and Jewish blood on their hands. That's the history of the Jewish people. That's the Jewish people. And therefore, this is an interesting question to keep an eye on when we hit this tipping point. I'll just finish with one thought, which is at the very end of the sheet. You don't have to turn to it now, where Rav Zevin also raises the fascinating final question, which is, if the Jewish people created a Kedusha the first time around when Yahshua came in and they conquered the land, and then they created a Kedusha the second time around when Ezra came in and occupied the land, is it possible to argue that they created a Kedusha the third time round already when we formed Medinat Yisrael? Meaning the security structure of what we have, Baruch Hashem, in Eretz Yisrael today is far superior to what we had. That's just a question of historical fact, to what we had in the Second Temple times. Far superior. So is there any now halachic argument, and he raises this, to say that actually, even though technically the Rambam says that this didn't apply, that didn't apply, maybe there's a new Kedusha, maybe down in Elat, where nobody really had before in the Kedusha, maybe that's also part, maybe Arava in the Negev, and that has interesting implications as well, which will make it more difficult to bring food from out there and claim that it's not subject to Shemitah or Trumas and Masras, because maybe the state itself creates a certain Kedusha. That might depend on your perspectives on Medinat Yisrael and all sorts of other things, but it's an interesting question to throw out there at the very end. Halacha l'maisa, hopefully the apple and the honey next week will be kosher l'mahadrin. But I really think, just to reiterate the point I made at the very beginning, Trumas and Mashas is something I think we should try to embrace a little bit more. Run out to a grapevine that belongs to a friend and have a little ceremony with Trumas and Mashas and connect to the mitzvah. What's that? Yes. Okay, people could stay here just for 1 minute. We have a very important announcement coming up from Rabbi Shaw.
Hi everyone. Just first of all,